For over 10 years, VOC Nation has taken listeners behind the scenes of the greatest moments in pro wrestling history. Our hosts are not only experts on the business, but have lived in the business. Subscribe and hear weekly podcasts from hosts like legendary pro wrestling journalist Bill Apter, former Impact Wrestling star Wes Briscoe, former WWE and AWA broadcaster Ken Resnick, former WWE and TNA star Shelly Martinez, former WCW star The Maestro, NWA legend The Raging Bull Manny Fernandez, and much more. VOC Nation programming is free on most major podcasting apps, including iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and Radio.com. And video podcast and bonus content is available on Patreon for as low as $3 a month. What are you waiting for? Head to VOCNation.com and dig into the most comprehensive podcast network built for pro wrestling fans. Find us on Facebook and Instagram at VOC Nation Wrestling Network and follow us on Twitter at VOC Nation.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Talking Fast. And thank you guys so very much for joining me. Before we get started talking about my guest today, let's talk about patreon.com/sassysteffi. Starting at only $2, you're going to get so many great exclusives for the whole month. You're going to get early access to the podcast. You're going to know who my guests are before anybody else, and chances are you're going to get to ask them a question as well. So make sure you go and subscribe to patreon.com/sassysteffi because that's just the beginning. The tiers go up from there with even more and cooler exclusives. So once again, go check out patreon.com/sassysteffi. You can follow me, of course, on Instagram and on Twitter at sassysteffi. Now, if you're watching on YouTube, don't forget to go and hit subscribe if you haven't already. And also hit that bell notification because you never know when something new might be coming out. And if you're listening on your favorite podcast platform, don't forget to go and subscribe there as well. And if you don't mind, please do me a favor and go and rate and review Talking Sass. And please give a 5-star rating. Now, on to today's guests. Like I said, very excited for both of them. First, I want to talk about Dan Murphy because he's on every month, as you know, as our monthly pro wrestling history lesson. And in April, his book, The Wrestler's Wrestler, is going to be coming out, and I'm so excited for him. So make sure you guys go and pre-order that on Amazon or wherever you get your books from. Now on to today's main guest. You have seen her on NXT. You have seen her on AEW, where she instantly became a meme. She is everyone's favorite Aussie. She is Heartbreak Core, and she's That's So Shazza. This is Shazza McKenzie. Hey Shazza, how's it going?
That's good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I mean, I'm in Canada, and I know you're in Australia. They're starting to get back to a little bit of normal, right?
Yeah, we have a reasonably normal life. Aside from not being able to leave our island. Other than that, completely normal. Well, not completely normal, but reasonably normal. We're just trapped inside, but that's okay.
I mean, if I were you, but I'm sure this is kind of overrated to you, but because I've never been to Australia, I'd be like, I'm stuck with all the kangaroos and the koalas, and they're so cute. I'd be happy about that.
Yeah. Little spoiler, we don't actually ever see kangaroos or koalas like in day-to-day life. Sorry. Well, sorry to break your heart.
You're in Sydney, so I mean yeah. Obviously you're in like a major city in Australia. Do you actually, this is like more of a question for me because I love watching Finding Nemo, is there a 42 Wallaby Way Sydney, Australia anywhere in there?
I mean, there might be, but I don't, if it is, I've never visited, but there probably is, honestly. Like, we get some weird street names, so it seems likely.
I love it. I love it. Well, let's talk about you and everything that you've been through in your career. But, like, I was telling you earlier, I listened to a couple of your podcasts to get ready for today and, you know, to have, like, some more background on Shazza McKenzie. So I was interested. When you were young, as a kid, you did like a lot of like odds and ends, like extracurricular activity things. Like you were a gymnast, you were doing pageants, you were in singing lessons for like most of your childhood. I mean, what didn't you do?
I didn't do a lot of sport.
No, okay.
No, I did. The only sport I ever like really played was basketball. Like I really liked basketball. My dad liked basketball, I think, and like that sort of just like got pushed on me, I guess. I don't know. It was what I had to do. So that was like really the only sport I did. I did a lot of performing. So I always wanted to be a performer. I was always wanting to dance and act and sing and be in front of people and like, but I'm a Leo. So I'm like center of attention all the time. Me. So I think that's what led to me being like wanting to do all that stuff. Like I always wanted to be a performer. But yeah, and like that was I guess I did gymnastics, but gymnastics is still like, and it's still like you perform your routine, and like everyone's watching you. It's still a performance. Like I did rhythmic gymnastics at one point as well, where it has all the ribbons and the balls and it was very intense. But like everything like that, like I guess I did ice skating as well, like figure skating, which again it's a sport, but it's a performance. So like I wasn't into like rugby or soccer or I don't know, cricket or anything like that. But I was always like I needed to perform. I was always a performer. Which I get horrible stage fright, so it doesn't make sense. But
yeah, that definitely is kind of ironic.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of performing, one of the things that I thought was really cool when I was listening to your podcast is you were on Australia's Got Talent. Like, it's not like a look on your face, but this is a really good story, so if you care to share it.
It was, so that came about because the person that I was doing, so this is literally 10 years ago now, because it was 2011, so just for like the idea of what was happening. So there was this guy that sometimes would wrestle in a dress, and he would wrestle, his name's Cracker Jack, and he'd wrestle with Cracker Jill, which was Cracker Jack's sister, but it was very obviously just him in a dress, like very like Santino Marella. So the people that do like Australian Idol and stuff, they have like producers that go out and try and find acts, and somehow someone found him and was like, this is great, we want this, like you wrestling a girl, like this is hilarious. And so we went through the whole process of doing it, and like before we did it, we were like you understand that this is like a guy and I'm a girl and we're going to be wrestling on TV, like this is primetime TV, like do you understand what's going to happen? They're like, yeah, it's fine, like it's hilarious, like he's in a dress. And I was like, I don't think this is gonna go down how you think this is gonna go down, producers, but okay. And needless to say, we got out there, everyone's laughing, everyone's ha 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 ha, and then the second he like swore on me, the crowd's go, oh, and then it was just like this awkward, like, oh no, oh. And then so then when it actually aired on TV, it was clipped down to, it was only things of me hitting him, like it was me doing a runner on him, me doing a crossbody on him, me hitting him with a pan or a handbag, like it was all like they just cut out anything that had him getting any offense on me, because obviously a primetime crowd, especially going to watch a talent show, did not want to see this jacked up grizzly man with long hair and a long beard, like he's covered in scars, he's like a deathmatch wrestler when he's not in his dress, like they didn't want to see that guy beat up this sweet little innocent blonde girl. And so we were right in the end, but hey, got on TV, so it is what it is.
That's amazing. Like when I heard you tell that story, I was dying. And even now, like I hear, you know, just slightly different details obviously from when you said it on your podcast, because you're doing like a more condensed story, but it's still it's pretty hilarious, just because like you told them in advance, like, are you sure it's okay? And like, oh yeah, yeah, no worries.
It's hilarious. That's be fine. He's in a dress. Like, no, it's not gonna be fine. So just come on, guys.
Yeah, just because a man has on a dress, I mean, he's obviously a man, does not make a man hitting a woman television worthy.
Yes, exactly. Like it's not the same as like intergender wrestling, when you like you show both competitors as like equal athletes, and like it's a very different presentation to hilarious guy on TV in a dress and girl wrestling for 2 minutes. Like it's a very different reaction.
Now, when the producers came to you guys, was it meant to be more of a comedy spot, or was it meant to really show off, like, the athleticism of both of you?
Oh, no, it's supposed to be a comedy spot.
Okay.
We did, like, it was a comedy match that we did. Like, we did very, it was very, like, I don't know, like, I hit him in the groin and, like, funny things like, it was very, like, you know, boy, girl, like, your generic, what you would have seen, I guess, in intergender wrestling 10 years ago, where it was, like, the girl as the weaker component and, like, trying to get up on the guy, and then the hilarious things would happen at the end and everything like that. And, yeah, it was meant to be, like, funny, but it was just, like, as soon as he did anything to, like, get heat on me, like, it was just, like, he was going to get real heat because the real world is not prepared for that.
Definitely. Especially if they're not a wrestling crowd, per se. Like, I mean, if you're in front of, like, a crowd and they understand what's going on, what the storyline is here building into it, but if you're just on, like, a talent show showing them this kind of stuff, I mean, they're not necessarily in on the gag.
Exactly. Like, they think, holy crap, that guy is just beating up that girl. Like, they know wrestling's fake, but as soon as they see it in real life, they're like, well, that was real. And I was like,
That's what I love about people, too, when they say that wrestling's fake, but they get up in arms about something that happens within wrestling. I'm like, let's go. Like, I would say, like, you guys, like, watch movies and all of that kind of stuff, and those people are trained actors on wires. We are trained wrestlers without wires. Like, it's the exact same thing.
Yeah, it's the exact same thing. We're just doing a live performance, and your movies, if they botch, they get to redo it.
Yeah.
They get a second take.
Yeah, we don't get that liberty in wrestling.
Nope.
Well, maybe some do now with, obviously, the pandemic. They can, that wasn't live, we'll just reshoot that real fast and whatever. But, you know, normal
wrestling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, if you're in front of an independent crowd, there's no redos.
Nope. And they'll make sure you know if you've done something wrong.
If the crowd doesn't let you know, Botchamania certainly will.
Thanks, Matthew.
Well, let's talk more, because you were obviously already pro wrestling at that time. You knew what you were doing. You were all over the Australian independents. Within a year after that, though, you were debuting in the U.S. at many different companies, including the one where I met you at, which I don't know if you recall that weekend.
Do
you remember that was my birthday weekend?
Yeah, I remember. I remember meeting you. I remember, like, it was a crazy weekend.
Yeah, that weekend, I apologize to everybody who was at the hotel that we stayed at that weekend, because after the Sunday taping, which Sunday of that weekend was my actual birthday, I got nice and hammered at the after party, which is cool. It's my birthday, right?
It's what you do, yeah.
Yeah, but I know my limit, and I was at my limit. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going back to the hotel, and I'm going to bed, and everything's going to be great. No. Because when we got back to the hotel, like, to go to the elevator over here to our left, and, like, right in front and right to the right of that is, like, this little area where everybody was, like, hanging out. And I can't remember who all was in that room at that time. But I just remember I walk in, and some of the Japanese girls that happened to be in town that weekend were in that room with Dave Prazak. And I can't remember really anybody else at that time, because, like I said, I was really hammered. But they were like, birthday, Chuck. And I was like, no. So everybody's going, Chuck, Chuck, Chuck. And I don't know what time of night it was at that point, but I was like, all right, one, and I got to go. And I'm not, at that point, I didn't have anything bubbly in my system. So they had, I don't know if it was champagne or sparkling wine or what it was, but I chugged it, and I was like, oh, man, I got to go. And they're like, no, one more. And I was like, peer pressure. And so I ended
up, don't do that to you,
having a bad experience in the elevator that evening and shutting down the elevator for the next day. So I apologize to all the Shimmer girls about that. But
it happens.
How was that weekend?
It happens. A lot of crazy things happened in that little like annexed room down at the Shimmer Hotel. Like kids it's these so- days, they don't know. They don't know anymore. There's no Shimmer after party anymore. There's no like everyone flies out on Sunday night, so they don't know mm-hmm. what it was like in that Shimmer Hotel. The chaos. Oh.
If those walls talk, like that's yes. a hotel. If those walls could talk, there are some crazy stories. Like I won't say names, but like I remember one time I was going down the stairwell, and there just happened to be one of the girls getting spray tanned in the stairwell. So she's just standing there, butt naked, and they're spraying her down, like in the middle of the hotel stairwell.
Yep.
It's like those walls right. talk.
Yes.
Now, I remember we were actually supposed to wrestle, like, maybe a year or two later on Shimmer, but then, like, last second it got taken away, and I was so devastated.
It was so chaos.
Oh, I wonder
like, we had the whole thing planned.
Yeah.
Like, we had the whole thing planned, and then they're like, change your mind. This is what's happening instead. And then I think that was when I was very relatively new to Shimmer, and I'd never really, like, had to work so like changed up on me so mm-hmm. quickly, and I was just like in panic mode because it was like, yep, so your match has changed, now you're wrestling this person in 3 matches time, and I'm like, what do you mean? Honey, like I'm just playing, like I have got this, can I not do this, what's wrong with this?
I was feeling the same way. I was so devastated because like when you first came in, we became friends. And I was like, oh, man, I was like, I want to wrestle Shazza. Because one of my best matches I ever had at Shimmer was actually with Madison Eagles. I loved my match. And I was like, okay, another Australian, I got to get my hands on this one. And it just got
We're not all out. Like Madison. We're not all like Madison. She is a... No. She, when I sent my, like, demo reel to Dave for mm-hmm. Shimmer, I think I had like a match with Madison on there, and he just replied back and he was like, I'm not even watching that because that's cheating. And I was like, damn it, it's a really good match though. And he's like, I know it would be because it's Madison. Of course it's a really good match. Like she makes it. I'm like, damn it.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, my match with her, like, holy cow. I was like, I didn't know I could do half the things that I did. And I was the heel. I was technically the aggressor, and she's like 3 feet taller than me. So it was crazy.
Yeah.
Like crazy. Just talented.
She's so talented.
I think the same when I watch your matches. Like I don't think I've seen a bad Shazza match.
Oh, there's plenty. there's plenty.
Well, then, I will take your word on that. I'm not going to argue with you to say that, but
yeah.
I have not seen a bad Shazza.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
So, I mean, as you kept coming over to the States, you came – how many times have you lost count now?
Yeah, it's like – I remember in 2018, the first trip I did in 2018 was like my 10th trip because I remember being like 10th time, and it was the first time I stayed in Chicago for like – 2 extra days, so I was like, I should just, like, I was like, okay, I've been here 10 times, it's time to actually see Chicago, like, other than the Shimmer Hotel, and then since then, I've been, like, another, like, 6 or 7 times, like, in the last, like, 2 years, well, not the last year,
obviously.
Actually, yeah, so,
well, the last year, I actually want to talk to you about that, because, I mean, literally, well, it'll be a year and a couple weeks now. You flew to the United States to go on your next, you know, US tour of what you were doing. And as you were on the plane in the air with no Wi-Fi, anything to, like, connect to the world completely changed. How was that for you?
So it's actually, as we record this, I know this will date the podcast, it's actually a year ago today that I got on the plane. Yeah. I've got all my memories today. I was like, yay, thanks Time Hop. Thanks Facebook Memories. Love that. it was crazy. Like, so when I first got off the plane and, like, started hearing and seeing what was happening,
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends, so for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcasts, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510, he's declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
It was kind of like a weird, like, state of denial. So, like, I stayed in America. I flew in on the Thursday, and I flew out on the Monday or the Tuesday after. Like that was the period of time that it took me to decide that I had to go home. So I flew in on the Thursday. The Friday, everything was kind of like a bit weird, but like everything was kind of happening, but it was like everyone, they were talking about this 2-week lockdown and I was like, okay, it's just 2 weeks. Like it'll be fine. And so I had this fear of like, if the lockdown was only 2 weeks, cause that's what they were telling us at the time. They were like, you know, we're just going to lock everyone down for 2 weeks and then 2 weeks that'll like sort it all out and we'll go back to normal. And it was like, if this lockdown is only 2 weeks and I fly home and then everything else that I had planned just goes on as planned, then I've gone home for no reason. And my country is locking us in our, in the country. So I can't get back out if I go home. But like, I'm very thankful that I did go home because I otherwise would have been much worse. But yeah, it was just, like, it's just, it took me a while to like that, like I got there and was kind of like, okay. And then I had like a show. I got two shows done while I was there on the Saturday and the Sunday. And by the time I finished the Sunday show, it was like every other show I had booked for like the next like 3 weeks had been canceled. And I was like, okay, time to go home. Like I was like that night, I like, as I was driving home from that show, I was like rescheduling my flights and figuring it all out because I was just like, I don't know what I'm doing with my life and trying to figure it all out. And then I came home and then I had to quarantine for 2 weeks and then we had a lockdown for like 3 months here. I just stayed at home for literally 3 months and didn't have a job and didn't have anything to do. And then now it's kind of normal.
Wow.
But it like it was wild, like yeah, like a year ago, like the year, it's so crazy that so much has happened in a year, like that we've gone from like this complete lockdown and shutdown to where we are now here in Australia, where like I feel comfortable moving around and going around and we like have shows starting back up with like real crowds and like they're still at I think like 50% capacity of like the actual venue sizes, but like it's still like a couple of hundred people. Like it's not like you walk out and you're like, this place is empty. You're like, you walk out and you're, this is a decent sized crowd. Like this is okay. Like this isn't nothing. So it's, yeah, it's just a strange adventure I've been on.
When you go and you have these crowds, are they socially distanced or wearing masks or anything at all like that?
No, so the only place that masks are like legally required are in on public transport, like your buses and trains and stuff like that. But we have like we haven't had any community transmission of COVID for I think it's about 50 something days at the moment. So like we have cases, but they're all in hotel quarantine. So anyone that flies into the country is locked in a hotel for 14 days and like completely isolated and everything like that. We had a couple of breaches from like hotel quarantine where like the cleaners from the hotel quarantine got COVID and then like went to, I don't know, the bottle shop. And then like there was like small little clusters like that. And mm-hmm. so anytime anything like that happens, things kind of shut down again. Well, not shut down, but like we get a bit more stricter with our rules. Like the goal is to keep businesses open and never have to lock us all down again. And now we've got the vaccine rolling out. So most of the frontline like quarantine hotel workers and stuff have been like starting their vaccines and stuff. So they don't have to worry about COVID spreading out of the hotels. It's crazy. Like we have the only rule that they have when they're, in like a live event is that there's no dancing. So they have to stay like the rule, like the legal term is no dancing, but it's basically that they have to stay seated. So, they can get up and be like, yeah, but then they have to get straight back down. Like they're not allowed to like walk around the venue lots and stuff. Like once you're in your seat, you're in your seat. But you can scream and shout and do whatever you want from your seat. You just can't like jump around and go,
wow,
like that.
Such a difference. Like, just like, and you guys sound so organized. Like, I live in Canada and I would like to say that we're pretty conservative on the side of certain things with COVID. And like, but we still have a curfew until 8 p.m. or from 8 p.m. to I think it's like 5 a.m. I don't know. I'm not up that early enough to be outside anyway. But like, it's crazy to me to like think that there's somewhere in the world where things are getting back to normal. And like for me, like when I'm in Quebec and they're like, okay, things are starting to get serious, so we're gonna lock you guys down like a little bit more with different rules. And I'm like, but we're nothing like the States, and you know they're opening. Me, it's going too far, but, you know, to my family and friends that live in the States, you know, they're like, oh, no mask mandates anymore. And I'm like, are you guys kidding me?
Yeah, that's wild.
The numbers are still sky high. Like, what is your
problem? Yeah, we get like, the last time there was like a lockdown-y kind of thing, like one of our because we have a lot of state borders as well. So like, I haven't left. I haven't left Sydney. I left Sydney once for a wedding and I drove like 2 hours out of Sydney. That's the furthest I've traveled in the past year. But like we've had state borders have been closed. So we haven't been able to like travel interstate a lot. So like, Melbourne, which is in Victoria, they got locked down, a couple of weeks ago now, because there was like 3 cases that had come out of like the hotel quarantine, and so like they went into like a strict lockdown for 3 days though, and but then after those 3 days they just went back to normal. So it was like a shock for them for 3 days, but it nipped everything in the bud and then they could go on with life. And like we had a breakout in Sydney over Christmas, which meant that we couldn't, like, my in-laws all live interstate and I hadn't seen them for like over a year because we haven't been able to travel. And so like I was supposed to go to Melbourne for Christmas and we couldn't go, like that all got cancelled because COVID. So like it's hard. I've had booking, like I had like the start of the year I was supposed to travel to Melbourne for a show in January, and then we got locked down and blocked out of Melbourne like a week or two before it. And so it's like it's a point where like it's fine, like our day-to-day life is fine. Like I can go to work and I can go to the grocery store and I can go to the gym and like I don't have to like stress about day-to-day life. But like the things that I want to do, where I want to like travel around, like even now I have like a show booked in April, so in a couple of weeks in an interstate, and like I think it's going to happen, but like I never want to get too excited because I don't know, like I don't, like I was crushed when I my last trip interstate got cancelled for like wrestling. I was like, finally, I'm wrestling outside of Sydney, like different crowd or whatever. Like, and it just like it crushes you. So I'm just kind of like every show, I'm like, this is cool, but also it can be taken away from us at any time because like this is like if they're gonna shut down anything, they're gonna shut down like people getting sweaty and yelling at each other in a wrestling ring in a small room with lots of people, like, and that's completely fair. I understand. Sure. So I try not to get like too connected to like things that I'm doing, but like also I get very excited at the same time, so it's hard. Even just like the little bit of like I've only wrestled, it's where like a couple months into the year I've wrestled once this year. But like, and so like every match that I do just means so much more because it's like, I have like a month to think about this one thing that I'm going to do as opposed to like when you're doing lots of things and you kind of like, just like, okay, but like these are the, like the things that I do. And so you know these things and like everything's chaos and you get into the show halfway through the show and everyone's leaving here and there and whatever. So that's nice. Like, but it's also, it's just so completely different to like, think about one match for like a month instead of thinking about 500 different matches and what could happen and then just figure it out there.
Yeah, well, it makes you really count your blessings and certain things that you get to do for sure. Like, it's crazy.
Oh, yeah.
But let's talk more about your wrestling career because obviously we don't want to talk about COVID the whole time and the differences between Australia and what's going on the Western part. Yeah. Now, one of those trips when you came over to the States, I mean, many of them, but one of them that I want to talk about is NXT when you were versus Emma. And it was so cool because NXT, they put over on commentary that this was a rematch that Emma was having from her last match that she had in Australia. So how cool is that for you?
That was like the coolest moment of my life. Like, I will be forever indebted to Tennille for like that opportunity. Like, I don't know how, like, from my understanding, they kind of said, like, what happened was we were at Lexi's for customs before Shimmer, and we were going to, go to the NXT taping the next day because it was the first time that, like, Billy and Peyton had been, we'd been over since they'd been signed, so we were like, oh, we'll go watch our friends wrestle, like, that's real cool. And so the day before we were going, Lexi pulled me aside and was like, oh, they want you at the show tomorrow at 1 p.m. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, this makes no sense. And she's like, WWE want you there. And I was like, what are you saying? Like, it was just so far from my mind. Like, you always imagine that if you're going to get this opportunity, you're like, you're going to like train real hard and you're going to be in like the best shape you ever could be in. And like, you're going to put your best foot forward. But like, I was eating donuts for breakfast. Like, I was like, I'm on holidays, bitches. Like, what? Like, I was just so like not mentally prepared for that opportunity. And like, also the idea of wrestling for WWE was so far from my, like, it's not like it is now where they hire a lot of girls from the independents, whereas like this was still very much like, this is before they hired like Heidi Lovelace and Evie and Kimberly and like, or like before they did their big like indie hire. So the idea of wrestling for WWE, I was kind of like, no, like I don't think that's ever really in my like forte. Like, I'm just happy wrestling and like telling stories and doing what I do. Like, that was just not a thought. So it was all just very overwhelming. But apparently, like, what I believe happened was someone asked Lexi for, like, someone at WWE, because I think maybe Billy and Peyton had pointed out that there was going to be a bunch of internationals at Lexi's house that weekend. And so someone had asked Lexi for a list of who was at her house. And I believe Tennille was like, look, if Shaz is there, I would really like to wrestle Shazza, because it was when she just turned into Evil Emma, like, she'd stopped being Dancy Emma, whatever. So
I love that.
Yeah, so she wanted to wrestle me because then it could be like this story of how she's changed as a performer and Like, so that's why, and that's why they put it, like, we told them about it on the commentary and stuff, and they put it over in commentary and stuff, because I think, and that was a story she wanted to portray. And, like, I'll forever be indebted to Tennille, because, like, I just, like, that was just never on my mind or my thoughts that, like, any of that was just so far from what I imagined I could do. But then once I did it, I was like, okay, yeah, I can do this. and then it just became, like tunnel vision for the next, I don't know, like, 5-6 years. It's just been, like, I can be a wrestler, like, full-time. Like, I can do this. I can be on TV. Like, I am good enough. Well, like, lots of, I'm not good enough, but then lots of, yes, I am good enough. And, like, cause you are that sort of thing. Like, is that... that sort of mental game that you play with each other, play with yourself. But that sort of was like the catalyst for me ever even attempting to, I don't know, be a signed wrestler in any capacity.
Well, I mean, it worked out, that match must have worked out well for you with WWE, because, I mean, just a couple of years later, you were back and you were wrestling Kairi Sane on NXT as well. How was that experience for you? Was
yeah.
it different? Because did you have more time to prepare?
That one I had a bit more time to prepare. So in between, so after the Tennille match, I kind of kept in contact with WWE and was very like, here's my stuff. What's going on? Here's my stuff. One of those people. And in that time between then, they had a tryout in Australia, which I did. It was the one that Rhea Ripley, was signed from. So I always make this joke that every person that I've ever wrestled in front of, talent relations has a contract, because I wrestled Rhea at the tryout, and then, a year or two later, I wrestled Indy Hartwell, in front when they were like down watching one of our shows. So it's like his ongoing joke. But then the last time they were down there, no one from my match got signed. So I was like, okay, guys, sorry, I've lost my touch.
You left Chuck there for a while.
Yeah. But, so like that was kind of, I kept in contact. I had a tryout and they were looking for girls for the first Mae Young Classic. And there was kind of talk about maybe being in it, maybe being an alternate. Awesome. That's the word. And then that sort of kind of all fell through, which understandably, because they had Rhea and they had Tony, like they don't need a third blonde Australian, like, especially when I'm like 10 years older than both of them. So like, I was like, yeah, that's fine. But I still like kept in contact and like kept pushing to things. And I think, that was the one when I did, wrestled Kairi Sane. I didn't know, like, I was over for like a Shimmer Mania trip or whatever. And I just told them like, hey, I'm, you know, in the States at this point in time. And then they were like, oh yeah, like come down. And I was like, cool, I will come down. But it's still like, you don't know what you're doing until you get there. Like, you don't know if you're just going to sit around and hang out or whatever. And then they came out of their production meeting and they're like, yeah, so it's you and Kairi Sane today. And I was like, what? Okay, cool. Yes, sure. No worries. I'll do that. So that was really fun. It was really fun planning the match with her because it was supposed to be a squash match. It was a squash match. So planning it with her, and I don't think she'd had many squash matches at that point in time. So she'd be like, oh, I do this. And then I'd be like, cool. And she'd be like, so then you? And I'd be like, no, like, not me. Like, I don't do anything. All you. Like, I'm not part of this. I'm just here for you. And she's like, oh, but surely you get something in. I was like, no, that's all you. You get it all, not me.
Oh, man. Well, you haven't just had opportunities with WWE either, because you've also had opportunities with AEW, did AEW Dark, you did the Casino Battle Royal. And I just have a question because, I mean, the picture where you're in the split doing your pose and Britt Baker is super kicking you across the face, was that planned or is that just a lucky meme that came out of it?
So that happened. So at the time when that Casino Battle Royale happened, so I do the pose, whatever. That's like what I've always done as my entrance. And Kylie Rae does a very similar pose.
Mm-hmm.
And she was signed by AEW. And at that time, she hadn't been seen for a while and no one really knew what was happening with her. So I remember specifically when I was going to stun a swole and then Britt was going to super kick me. But I remember specifically sitting there in the splits and being like, But I'm not going to do my post because I don't know what's happening with Kylie Rae, and I don't want to do anything that would remind anyone of Kylie Rae. Like, I don't want to get hate for, like, you get hate for stupid reasons in wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
So I was just like, oh no, don't do it. And I could it was like happening in slow motion in my mind as I was doing it. And I was like, oh no, it's happening. Oh no, oh no, oh no, oh fuck, I've done it. Oh crap, I am here. I was like, don't do it, oh no, crap. And then the kick happened. And it was just a very lucky that James got such a good shot at it. But yeah, like I remember specifically was like, don't do the pose. Like just land in the split and then get super kicked. Do not do your pose. Do not do it. Oh crap.
But I mean that picture of Britt like super kicking you in the face, it was everywhere, and every once in a while, it pops up pretty frequently. So, I mean, that's pretty epic.
Yeah, becoming a meme is probably, like, a good life goal tick. Like, can tick that one off the bucket list.
Amazing. And I know, like, you were in contact with them because, like I said, you had the AEW Dark match where you tagged against Leva Bates and Nyla Rose. Which, I mean, that had to have been amazing, being able to – I mean, Nyla is, like, their biggest heel besides Britt Baker.
Yes. It was, like, when that came about, that was, like, another thing of me just being like, oh, hey, like, I'm going to be in the country. And then they were like, oh, yeah, let's see. And then, like, half an hour later being like, oh, okay, yeah, like, we'll use you on this date. And I was like, what? And they're like, yeah, we'll get back to you with your flight information. I was like, what? What do you mean? Like, you're literally the second biggest company in the world. Don't you have to have, like, a debate, like, a sit-down, like, pros and cons of whether or not Shazza is worth having on our show? Like, and it was just like, oh, no, like, you're fine. Like, we like you having you around if you're in the States. Like, that's fine. That's easy. Like, of course we'll use you. Because, like, it's a lot different for me, I guess, as an international, like, because there's so much, like, immigration and all this kind of stuff. Like, it's not as simple as, like, if I lived in America, like being able to be like, oh, like we can just use her at any time. So like I always, like when I'm in town, I'm like, let me show you what I can do. So it's just, yeah, it's strange and it was wild. It was such a crazy, like, I remember like feeling really depressed about the, like, like, I didn't watch it for a whole year. I only watched it like a year ago or like when it was like a year, like, up of it happening.
What?
Because I don't know what happened in my mind. I'd like ruined I was calling my husband at like 2 a.m. It would have been fine to him, it would have been like afternoon for him, but it was like 2 a.m. for me, and I was like, oh, I've ruined everything. But I just thought I did so bad in this match. Like, I don't even know, like, no one was like, hey, you did really bad. It was just like in my head I'd done horrible. And I was just like this distraught mess, because that's what, like in wrestling, you just think that you've ruined everything, all the time, because of course. So it was a roller coaster. But then by the time I got home from America, like while I was on my plane on my way home, this like hashtag campaign to like hashtag sign Shazza started. So then it was like this whole other like roller coaster of emotions, because then I was getting like everyone like tweeting it, hashtag sign Shazza, and like Nyla tweeted it and Joey Janela tweeted it and Brandy responded to it, and she said like, yes, like I love her, I want her. It was like when she was doing the hair thing, she was like, you know, her hair's really pretty or something, like I want her hair, and like said something like that. And it was like this real like crazy, I don't know, just emotions. That whole experience, life is emotional. Wrestling is emotional.
And
no one talks about the absolute just roller coaster of like highs to lows to highs to lows that you go through.
In my opinion, I say sign Shazza. We should get that as a hashtag again, because I would love to see you on my TV weekly or biweekly or however the situation goes.
Once a month.
Every sign with.
I'm fine. Whatever. Like, once every 2 months, like, I'm cool, guys. Like, that's fine. Just maybe, like, just on a poster is enough for me. Like, that's really.
So, if COVID went away and you were allowed to leave Australia, you got signed to one of these major companies, say Impact or AEW or WWE or Ring of Honor, or any of these big companies on TV, are you prepared to leave Australia and just live out your dream over here?
100%.
What about your
like, we'll figure it out. Yeah, no. Like, he's always, like, since it became, like, my goal, mm-hmm. It's always been understood. Like, as long as I'm not, like, moving overseas to be poor. Like,
right.
Yeah, like, if I was moving overseas to be a struggling independent artist, I don't know he would be that supportive. He'd be like, excuse me, we have bills to pay and I'm not going to pay all of them.
Right.
But, like, as long as I was moving overseas to chase my dreams and was making enough to survive, not to support both of us, like, he works, he's fine, like, but, like, making enough to pay my half of life, mm-hmm. It would be, like, yeah, 100%, like, we'd figure it out, he'd move over or whatever, we'd figure it out, it'd be fine, like, it's always been completely, yeah, like, he always, when I was having my WWE tryout, like, a month or two before, and he was like, okay, and he sat down, and he was like, okay, what is everything that we need to do to get you prepared for this, and, like, is just 100%, like, on board, most supportive human in the entire world.
That's so wonderful. So,
yeah. I'm very lucky.
Because I know when I personally had some WWE extra work and stuff like that, my husband was really super supportive too. But, like, it's never, okay, we're going to upend our whole lives and move to another country now because we're in Canada.
Yeah.
But it's not across the world, you know, it's just a couple of, well, literally from where I am, it's like an hour drive to the U.S. border. So it's like not big of a deal, you know?
Yeah.
So that's fantastic. I'm glad that he's so supportive. And is he still wrestling?
Yeah, he's still wrestling. So he, instead of having a honeymoon when we got married, mm-hmm. Because, like, he's, again, the most supportive husband in the world. I said, hey, instead of using all this money for, like, a nice fancy honeymoon, can I just quit my job and we just go to America for 3 months so I can wrestle? And he was like, he wasn't, like, sure. He was like, this is a really dumb thing to do with all of our money, but okay. So he came to me. We both went to America in, like, March, April 2019. We were there for 3 months in 2019. And he was coming as well to, like, train and wrestle and stuff. And about 2 weeks into it, he dislocated his elbow.
Ooh.
And it's, like, it was a very bad injury. Like, and then we're also stuck in America where you can't get anything done to, like, fix it. So we were just kind of – it didn't heal right because we were there. But he stayed with me while I was there, like, so I could travel around and do everything that I had to do to get my name out there and create the brand and the awareness and get the experience and exposure and all the things that come with being a wrestler.
Yeah.
He stuck by all that. And then so finally, well, he was back to being okay to wrestle, like medically cleared to wrestle again by, like, March last year, but then COVID happened. So now he's kind of been back at wrestling since, like, October-ish last year. But, like, he's still young. He's got, like, he's really good. He's young. Like, if he ever turned to me and said, I want to be a signed professional wrestler, I would do absolutely everything I could to encourage him and to support him and to let him live his dream as well.
That is, like, the best couple thing ever. Like, obviously I have them, but to hear it come from someone else, like, that's amazing that there's so many couples that are that supportive of one another and can push each other towards each other's own dreams, whatever that may be. My couple and your couple is wrestling.
Yes, exactly. Like, we're both very honest with each other in, like, supporting each other. Like, we'll tell each other if, like, we do something and it's kind of shit, or, like, you know, like, there has to be that, like, honesty, because if we're ever going to uproot our entire lives for this dream, then we have to know that 100% has been put into it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, otherwise, because us rooting our lives to be a failure, not to be a failure, but like for not the best reason ever would be silly. So as long as I'm always putting in 100%, as long as he's always putting in 100%, we're supportive. And if we have a drop below 100%, we call each other out on that shit and go, oi, you slept in, you didn't go to the gym, sort your shit out.
Hey, that's the best that I've heard. And Shaza, it's been so great talking to you. I love that we got to catch up. I'd love to do it again soon.
Yes.
It's been
years.
Like everybody else that I talk to, it's been years.
Yes.
And I love getting to talk to everybody. So before we go, make sure to put over your podcast and all your
social media. Yes. Yes, so I have a podcast. It's called That's So Shaza. If you just search that, I'm sure it'll come up. And then I have all my social media is at Shaza_McKenzie is Twitter and Instagram. And the best way to support me is my Patreon, which is patreon.com/ShazaMcKenzie. There's like the video version of the podcast goes there and like photos and I don't know. I do live streams. I don't know. I do some stuff. It's exciting. It's cool. I think people like it. I don't know.
Well, obviously people like it if they keep subscribing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Shaza, this has been awesome. We'll see you guys next time.
Bye.
Hey, guys. Help me welcome back pro wrestling historian, and, of course, our monthly history lesson is with him every month, Dan Murphy. Hey, Dan.
Hey, thanks for having me back for yet another month. This is a new – every time I appear, it's a new record. You know, I'm making another appearance, so it's extending the record. So thanks for having me.
Besides myself, I mean, you're the most appearing guest on the show.
Wow, look at that. That's pretty impressive in a weird way. Well, thank you.
Well, how are you doing? I know your book's coming out next month. Of course, we got the plaque still behind you there.
Yeah, back over here. It is The Wrestlers, Wrestlers. It's the Masters of the Craft of Professional Wrestling. Very excited about it. Co-wrote it with a guy named Brian Young out of Buffalo, where I'm from. And we spent about a year and a half putting it together. Basically, your favorite wrestlers, interviewed a bunch of people and really had them talk about the people that they enjoy working the most, why they like working them. It's really about the art of pro wrestling. It's not about necessarily the guys or girls who have won the most titles, the ones who have done a variety of things. It's the ones who are just really solid workers, regardless of where they're pushed and promoted. And it's kind of celebrating those people. So I think it's a book that real wrestling fans are really going to like, and I'm very excited that it's finally coming out.
Well, I saw just a bit ago you posted, like, just some of the names of people that you interviewed for the book, and I was like, holy cow, that's a lot of great names just from the people you interviewed talking about who their favorite wrestlers are.
Thank you. Yeah, we tried our hardest. I really reached out from everybody, from guys like Terry Funk, older guys like that, Paul Orndorff, Terry Funk, and things like that. We talked to Jim Ross. Brody Lee, who obviously had just recently passed away. Buddy Colt, another older veteran who just passed away last week as well as we're recording this. And that was something that Brian and I really set out to do. When we came up with the idea of doing the book, I had the idea of doing a book on wrestlers and kind of the carpenters and the people who build wrestling. Brian had this idea of doing a book where you talk to all the old timers and get as many stories as you can before they're gone. Because people... they're gone. Their stories, all that history leaves. And we kind of combined those two ideas and had the wrestlers not talk about themselves or not talk about the stories that they always tell, but talk about their memories of being in the ring with other people. And because those are memories that will often go away. And that's really how the book came together. So yeah, I talked to about 45, 46 different people and really kind of picked their brain across different generations. And again, really happy with how it came out.
Oh, I'm so excited next month. I can't wait to order it and get it and have it and read it and have all these new stories that I get to, relive through the person's own story, you know?
Well, I'll tell you what. Right now, I'm going to actually talk about one of those stories. I want to talk about two real quick. See, there's a segue. So, okay, two people I'd like to talk about. And I'm going to refer to some notes here. Normally, I kind of do this off the top of my head. But these are people that I really admire, and they're criminally underappreciated in wrestling, and I want to make sure that I have everything. So if my eyes aren't always right on the camera, I'm just reading a little bit.
Number one,
somebody I talk a little bit about in Sisterhood of the Squared Circle, which you can also kind of see up on the wall from a book signing I did for that book, Cora Livingston. Now, Cora Livingston, not not as well known. She's still not in the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame, even though she's been nominated and on the list for years. It's kind of a crime that she's not. Believed to have been born in Buffalo, New York, anytime between 1886 and 1893. Records are really kind of all over the place with her. She was an athlete. She competed in track and field and got into wrestling, started competing in wrestling in carnivals and circuses at the age of 16. Now, for this month, the month of March, this is significant because in March of 1906, she wrestled three matches against Hazel Parker. Now, Cora Livingston, she was billed as 110 pounds, the champion featherweight of Buffalo. She was facing this Hazel Parker, 110 pounds, champion featherweight of the United States. They were going to do a best of three falls series, and the winner would be known as the Women's World Wrestling Champion, which would be essentially the first recognized Women's World Championship. So in March of 1906, the first fall, let's see here. So it was hyped in the newspaper that they would have the three matches, and it's reported both women are clever wrestlers and hold records. Parker won the first match on March 19th. Cora Livingston won the second match the next night on March 20th. And on March 23rd, Cora Livingston won the third and deciding bout. From that point forward, she was billed as Women's World Champion. So she went on. She ended up kind of competing throughout the United States, wrestled the British and Canadian Women's Champions, married Paul Bowser, who during that era, up until the 40s or so, was probably the top wrestling promoter in the United States based out of Boston. So she was very, very prominent working with him, although by that point she had kind of segued out of wrestling. And she was referred to by wrestling historian Nat Fleischer as, quote, Cora was recognized everywhere as the greatest female wrestler in the world. And what was really cool about her is she ended up getting women's matches booked on the same events as the men, taking it off of the carnival sideshow circuit and out of the circuses and putting on the same show as men. She ended up defending her championship in Illinois, Massachusetts, Ohio, North Carolina, Quebec, and was billed as the Gotchess of the Mat, as a reference to Frank Gotch. So really, she was an absolute pioneer of women's pro wrestling, criminally underknown, but had an incredible career early in the 20th century.
Beautiful. I love it.
Yes. Now, and speaking of beautiful, she was beautiful too. And that's the thing. She was, there's a great quote here actually that I didn't mention, but where was it? Okay. In a book by this writer, L.A. Jennings, a book's called She's a Knockout. Quote was, at the time that Livingston earned the right to declare herself the female champion wrestler of the world, the American press was displeased with female wrestlers because up until the early 1900s, there had never been a particularly skilled one. This was perhaps because most of the women billed as wrestlers were either actresses pretending to be competent fighters or untrained women looking to fill a particular niche. Cora was actually a great wrestler, legitimately good and good at the showmanship aspect of pro wrestling, but she was also a very attractive woman. And the traditional sense. So in a lot of ways, she was really the first, if you want to say diva, if you want to say knockout, she was the first very attractive woman that would become a championship wrestler, setting the stage for Mildred Burke and all of the women wrestlers that would follow afterwards.
And I bet so many of those women, well, I mean, Mildred Burke, obviously more in that time zone or time frame of life, but I'm sure like a lot of the women now probably don't even have any clue.
That's exactly it. And again, Google Cora Livingston, you'll find a lot. There's not a lot online. There are a few things if you dig enough, but she really does deserve some credit for her contributions to women's pro wrestling. The second person, again, dealing with the month of March, second person I have to talk about is actually a guy, and he is written about in The Wrestler's Wrestlers. This is the man that Lou Fez handpicked to defeat him for the NWA World title in March of 1956. Except the federal government wouldn't let the match happen. It's George Gordienko. George Gordienko is a native of Winnipeg, Manitoba. Met Lou Fez when Lou Fez was up working for the Stampede promotion in Calgary. They did a 60-minute draw. Lou Fez wrote about it. We once worked a 60-minute draw, and I couldn't run him out of gas, which almost never happened. And Fez was known for being able to outwork anyone. Mm-hmm. Gordienko had better cardio than Lou Fez in Lou Fez's prime. Gordienko had trained at the local YMCA, met some promoters, met the Minnesota wrestling promoter and wrestler Waller Carbo. They thought he'd be a good training partner for Vern Gagne, convinced him to come down to Minnesota, went to Minnesota, began wrestling, made his debut in 1946, started attending classes at the University of Minnesota, fell in love, got married, moved back to Winnipeg. Kind of beautiful story, except he had a terrible divorce. And when his wife left him, she reported him to the government, claiming that her ex-husband was a member of the Communist Party and that they had attended communist meetings of a Marxist socialist club while at the university. Now, this is during the McCarthy era, the Red Scare in the United States. His ex-wife and son moved back to the U.S. George Gordienko was never let back in the country. Yes. Now, he continued wrestling. Based in Canada, he wrestled internationally, but could never come back into the United States. So when Lou Fez was wrestling on a broken ankle, needed time off to get away and rehab and, you know, get away from the rigors of being world champion, he went to the NWA board, the NWA president, said, George Gordienko is the best wrestler in the world. He's the guy I want to drop the belt to. And they went to the U.S. government. They wouldn't allow it to happen. State Department would not lift their ban on Gordienko, would not allow him to come back into the United States. So instead, he ended up dropping the belt in March 15th of 1956 to Whipper Billy Watson. George Gordienko ended up wrestling all the way up until, I think, 1976, I believe, was named the top wrestler in the United Kingdom in 1963 and 1970, competed all throughout the Middle East, Europe, Japan, Africa, the Caribbean. Billy Robinson called him the greatest wrestler of the era, and he never really got a run as world champion and is largely unknown completely in the United States.
Well, yeah, like I've had this conversation with, I think it was LaFisto when I had her on. Like, a lot of people in the States don't know of wrestling history outside of the States, unfortunately, and that includes Canada. Like, some people just have no idea. And I mean, I can even say, like, other countries, like when I lived in the U.S., like I knew a little bit about Japan. I knew a little bit about, you know, Great Britain over there, the U.K. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, when I went over to the U.K., I also learned a lot there. But, like, everything is so U.S.-based as far as, like, wrestling history is concerned that, like, sometimes the crazy, amazing people and stories and history outside of the U.S. is just, like, non-existent, basically, because
nobody knows. It's like it never happened. That's exactly it. And imagine, had George Gordienko been able to come in, it would have changed American wrestling history. He would have been the NWA champion. He took the spot that went to Whipper Billy Watson, who's still an icon in Toronto and still very well-known. But Gordienko was the guy that his peers considered the best in the world, but politics prevented him from ever making it, at least in the U.S. Now, as a little interesting side note, Gordienko ended up having a little bit of success as a painter, and at one point actually got to meet Pablo Picasso, who it turns out was a big pro wrestling fan. So Gordienko, one of the proudest moments of his life, he talked about in articles and interviews for years later, was meeting Pablo Picasso, having a cup of tea with him, and being able to talk pro wrestling.
That's crazy. Who would have ever thought Picasso was a, you know, a wrestling fan? I mean, doesn't seem logical, I guess.
No, you never know. You never know what people are into, you know, and when they're not working, what they're into at home, you have no idea. But those are the kind of stories that are featured in The Wrestler's Wrestlers.
I love it. Even more so. I can't wait to dig into it.
Very cool.
All right, Dan. It's been awesome having you on. Can't wait to see what you have for us in the month of April.
This is Lance Storm, and if I can be serious for a minute, you're listening to VOC Nation Worldwide.
VOC Nation is one of the longest-running wrestling podcast networks. Having started way back in 2010, VOC Nation provides daily streaming shows where fans have the ability to interact with their hosts and guests via phone calls, emails, and Twitter. VOC Nation hosts also include former backstage interviewer from both AWA and WWE, Ken Resnick, former WCW performer The Maestro, former Impact performer Wes Crisco, Pro Wrestling Illustrated contributor Brady Hicks, and former Philadelphia radio personality Bruce Wirt. VOC Nation's two most popular shows are Wrestling with History, featuring Ken Resnick and Bruce Wirt, streaming live on Wednesday nights at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, and In the Room, featuring Pro Wrestling Illustrated's Brady Hicks and WCW alum The Maestro. Both shows take callers live during the show, and recent guests have included General Adnan, Tito Santana, Haku, Earl Hebner, Dangerous Danny Davis, Jimmy Hart, Ricky Steamboat, Brodus Clay, and so many more. Archive-free content includes past interviews with huge names like Hulk Hogan, Jesse Ventura, Kurt Angle, Sting, Mick Foley, Joey Styles, Howard Finkel, and so many more. Listen live at VOCNation.com and subscribe to all the podcasts by searching VOC Nation Radio Network on your favorite podcast app. And be sure to follow these guys on Twitter at VOC Nation.
This is your amiga, Shelly from Cali, to let you know you can catch me here on VOC Nation for Shelly Live. You never know what the hell I'm going to be talking about. Sometimes I have guests. Sometimes I let you on in the cheese mess, spill a little tea. Sometimes I cry. You have to tune in to find out why. And I also take your calls. I love chatting with you guys and seeing what the hell you guys are thinking. So meet me here on the VOC Nation. Be there or be square.
Rock and Roll Union for the past 2 years has been the place for rock and roll, new rock and roll, debuting rock and roll, and some of the old classics as well. We have welcomed guests from around the world, national artists and more. We have excited many people by our live events. We've welcomed everybody into the fold, and we continue to do so on a weekly basis. Guys, that is Rock and Roll Union, and that is what we do for you.
Saturdays, 6 p.m. Eastern, VOCNation.com. Each and every Thursday night, check it out. WCW star Stro Maestro takes you on a journey. It's WCW Retro. Talking old school, match of the week, talking dream matches, taking your calls and looking back on an incredible career of acting, entertaining, and wrestling. Check it out. VOCNation.com. WCW Retro. Be sure to call in Thursday nights, 9 Eastern, on the VOC Nation Radio Network.
The worldwide leader in entertainment. This is the VOC Nation Radio Network.